Hi, this is Jeff D., the host of the Nonprofits Atheist Podcast. The Nonprofits is made possible by volunteers and the generous support of listeners like you. If the promotion of positive atheist culture and the separation of church and state are values you hold dear, please consider contributing by becoming an ACA member or visiting our product page at evolvefish.com under the Partner tab. Thank you.
The Nonprofits. You're Dennis Lube, along with Russell Glasser and Jeff D., and you're coming to me live from the Free Thought Library in Austin, Texas, on the 6th of September, 2017. Your show is sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state. If I want to learn more about the ACA, I can call their voicemail at 512-220-6561 or visit their website at www.atheist-community.org. The Nonprofits broadcast live every first and third Wednesday of each month from 7:30 to 9 Central Time. I can join the Nonprofits chat room by following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com. So I will sit back and enjoy your show.
That's nice, Dennis. You kind of turned it around on him.
I did.
But I have to say that not everything is about you.
It wasn't the greatest intro. All I had to do was change a few words.
It was cute. It was creative. Yeah. Very inventive.
Sure.
How's everybody doing? This was a 3-week hiatus, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Oh, and, you're missing
just
us.
Just enough time to get hit by a giant hurricane.
Yeah. For anybody wondering, it rained kind of heavily here in Austin, but we didn't get hit nearly as hard as our friends down in Houston.
My hat blew off one time, so that was terrible.
I let my 15-year-old drive one evening.
Wow. During the hurricane?
It was in a tropical storm, and it wasn't.
It's horrific what's going on in Texas, in those areas that are affected, which is not our area.
And by the way, if you're listening in Florida, now you've seen what happens to people
who stick around.
Yeah, so that. Irma is on the way.
You might consider.
Because Joel Osteen is for sure not going to let you in.
That's right.
There's a Joel Osteen facility in your area there in Florida. I don't know where he's.
I don't think so.
I don't know.
I
just wanted to get a dig in at that jerk.
If you don't want the hurricane to attack, stop being gay.
That's true.
There you go.
That's true. That's another thing you might consider. People would say you could stop these hurricanes if there was no more gays. So
that's right.
Why are you always being so gay? God has no choice but to hit you with hurricanes.
So this is the threat cure. Yes.
So I'm sure some of our listeners are wondering, what can I do that's constructive since I can't just pray to people? Any ideas?
Well,
if you have money that you can afford to part with, then contributing to efforts to help people in these ravaged areas might be good.
Such as the foundationbeyondbelief.org/hurricane-harvey-drive.
A fine choice.
I'll read that one more time. foundationbeyondbelief.org/hurricane-harvey-drive has been raising funds to provide relief for those impacted by the storm. If you want, you can put your secular values into action by donating to their fundraising drive. And Russell, you've got more to say about that.
Yes. As a matter of fact, if going to their website is too much effort.
It is a kind of long email, URL, I have to say.
I had a shorter one, but I didn't realize you were just going to read that one. So I didn't pull it up.
That was my part of the job.
That's okay. The Atheist Community of Austin, the board of directors met on Sunday and agreed that everything we made that day would everything that we received in donations on that day would be sent directly to the Humanist Disaster Recovery Team at Foundation Beyond Belief, along with us matching the first $1,000. And I my understanding is that that is also going to be true for the remainder of this show. So if you are listening on YouTube, then there is a button in the upper right corner of your screen, I believe, that you can click on and give something, and it will all just be redirected to HDR.
Cool.
And if you're not listening live on YouTube, but you still want to donate something, you can donate to the ACA if you want, or you can go to the Humanist Disaster Recovery website, and I'm sure there are many prominent donation links there. You want to read that full address again, Jeff?
FoundationBeyondBelief.org/Hurricane-Harvey-Drive.
Yes. So be productive.
That's the hurricane response portion of our show. Okay. Well, then.
I heard you bring up Joel Osteen.
I did. Yeah. You have something about Joel Osteen? Do you want to go right straight into that?
Yeah. I've got a Newsweek story from a couple of days
now,
ago.
Can I just preface this?
Yes.
To kind of put it in context of where I, as a random human being, think we are in this whole Joel Osteen escapade. All I've seen is a lot of back and forth on Facebook with some people talking about Osteen not opening up his church, and which is conveniently located and a huge facility that could house a bunch of displaced people during the storm, and then other people saying, oh, that was not true. And then finally the news appeared to be that he late opened the place up and started letting people in, and it just goes back and forth. So do you have – I would hope that this report you're about to read is at some actual facts.
Well, I hope so too, although as is frequently the case, I have not read this yet.
Woo-hoo.
So I'll let you know when I get there.
We'll hear it all together.
So Joel Osteen says this headline in Newsweek, a televangelist whose church closed during Hurricane Harvey tells victims not to have a poor me attitude. A televangelist whose church closed its doors during Hurricane Harvey claims that he is the victim of misinformation and told flood victims not to have a poor me attitude. In his Sunday sermon, wow, multimillionaire pastor Joel Osteen addressed the criticism that has been directed at him after his 16,000-seat Houston megachurch initially closed its doors during the storm in which thousands of people were left homeless and 40 were killed. Pictures and video posted on social media showed the church apparently undamaged by the storm, and Osteen initially claimed he had not opened its doors because he had not been asked to by the state.
Right.
Which includes God had not asked him to, right? Yeah,
apparently not. And we all know that churches love nothing more than to be asked for favors by governments.
Yeah, yeah.
That's their favorite thing to do.
And it just never occurred to him on his own.
You could.
Despite, you know, all the various weather disasters this nation has experienced in the last decade, and, you know, always shots of people in places just like that getting shelter, just never occurred to him on his own.
Right, no.
That's a thing you might do.
The power was in you all along.
Aren't they
you could just
be...
open your door
yeah.
by yourself.
But nobody asked.
Like, don't they pretend to be the gold keepers of morality and
somebody
being
just
nice?
Asked, he would have been happily been reminded to be a good person. Mm-hmm. Okay,
a decent human being.
Yes. Yeah,
but no.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Now I don't listen to Joel Osteen, so I don't really know what his voice sounds like. But he always strikes me as looking exactly like a Martin Short character of some kind.
Uh-huh.
So can you do a Martin Short?
I must say, you know, I really believe in these times of difficulty. It's for me certainly not the time to question your faith, but to turn to your faith, because God is the one that gives you the strength to make it through the difficult times. He said in a video of Sunday's sermon posted on YouTube.
Yeah, I saw a portion of that. I saw the portion of that where he deftly began talking about the people criticizing him, right, in front of his giant audience of sycophants. And then deftly turned it around to say, we were being criticized. You know, I've never once heard anybody try to put any of the blame on any of his followers, but he did, right?
Right.
He turned it around so they would feel personally affronted, which is exactly what you want if you're some prick that everybody is hating because of your actions and you need a bunch of support, right? You try to draw people in and trick them into thinking they've been insulted, which they hadn't been.
Right.
They're just, you know. Here, I'll happily insult them right now. They're a bunch of morons.
Yeah.
But that was not what the criticism of Joel Osteen was about, and the criticism of Joel Osteen was not directed at them.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Let's see. Joel Osteen blamed misinformation for criticism leveled at the church for remaining closed. He said he hasn't opened its doors due to safety concerns, and flood waters came within a couple of feet of breaching flood walls installed after floods in 2001.
You know, people have been driven from their homes and lost everything and are, like, hungry and tired and possibly injured. Those people can be dangerous.
Yes, they are.
So.
Oh.
Same reason they turned away Mary and that crew. Yeah.
This was a fantastic pull quote right at the end. He continued, this is – oh, it's something that you just kind of alluded to.
Yeah.
This is not just an attack on me. It's an attack on what we stand for.
There you go.
For faith, for hope, for love, he said. Jesus even said, when the world hates you, remember it hated me first.
And for
– which.
And they stand for, you know, not taking the risk of maybe racking up some repair costs afterwards.
Right.
Okay.
So that's what it's all about. It's about hating Jesus.
Right.
So now,
of course.
So now, but what people don't understand though is that this was just a big test run of how to. How to operate a facility, a large, expensive facility in the path of a hurricane, if you're a fascist asshole.
Yes.
So, and my understanding is that Mar-a-Lago is now on the path of Hurricane Irma.
Good.
So it'll be interesting to see if they apply the lessons of this facility to Trump's resort. Which I don't know how many people I could house.
Quite a lot, but I mean, couldn't afford it.
What do you mean? Oh, they could. That's right.
Right.
Yeah. The ticket price alone.
He'd be like, look how generous I'm being by letting people who can spend $2,000 a night.
We'll let them in half price.
Take
how
shelter.
About that? Half price.
Well, 10%. 5% off.
Oh, boy. And then he takes his attack right off.
Yeah.
But we will never know. So that was fine. Any more comments on Osteen?
No.
Well, here's something from overseas. That, I guess, did they ever get hit by hurricanes in England?
No, they have not discovered hurricanes.
Or do they have
good old American.
Is there another
know-how.
Name for it? Typhoon or
that might
something?
Be. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure they have some kind of severe.
They have some.
I'm just curious. I'm desperately looking for some sort of a bridge between the two stories.
But
yes.
Yeah. What I actually have
it's
here
called
is
bubble and squeak over there.
What? You can't just, and I know they have some dishes which from are outside of American experience, and the names sound kind of odd, but that doesn't mean you can just bash any two words together and say that's something that they eat. So according to a recent poll, for the first time, more than half of the people in the UK do not identify as religious.
Yay.
Hooray.
They're Brexiting religion over there.
I'm sending my envy over there for them.
Last year, 53% of people described themselves as having no religion in a survey of 2,942 adults by the National Centre for Social Research. And those aged between 18 and 25, the proportion was higher at 71%. And Julian writes, in many things, the UK follows the US. Let's hope that in this trend, the US follows the UK. Well, yeah, that would be convenient. I haven't really personally seen any big increases in non-religiosity over the last. I mean, we got a big jump when it hit, got up to about, 17% or so of non-religious people in the U.S.? And then it's been kind of holding steady? Or have you guys seen increases?
No, I don't. I haven't. It's hard to say. I mean, I feel like it is easier now than it's ever been to just mention, "Oh, I'm with a big atheist group."
Well, that's certainly true. Acceptance and acknowledgement of the existence of atheists is way up.
Yeah,
that's
like
certainly
I don't
true.
Get. Yeah. I don't get blasted or get the stink eye very much.
But are we still the most distrusted?
No.
No. Oh,
wait, no?
Someone's overtaking us?
I don't know.
Oh, that's right.
You sounded very certain.
There was that thing that we were still less trusted than the moose lambs.
I mean, years ago it turned out that the Tea Party was more disliked than atheists.
Yay!
But it's been a while since the Tea Party really was a thing, because now they're just mainstream Republicans.
True. Well, yeah, or Trump supporters. So
yeah.
Do you think I haven't seen a poll about comparing those folks with us folks. I don't know. Who knows? Who knows? We need more polling. We need more polling. How about some
Last September, so one year ago, Muslims passed us as the most unpopular group.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
I
was right. So I was right. We're not the least trusted.
We're not the least trusted. All right.
As of one year ago.
Yay.
We could have come back.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
We need to do more, we need to do some bad things. We kept thinking we'll have a meeting of the secret atheism movement to come up with some bad things to do to hurt our reputation more.
Yes.
So
well,
we can be number one.
There was another study, and by the way, to acknowledge people who are saying things, John Erickson on Facebook asked, going to talk about Joe, what's his name, and his church? So we can credit that whole last story to John.
You mean Joel, what's his name? Not Joe.
I said Joel. Oh. I meant to say Joel.
Okay. I may have just misheard.
Hi,
everybody. And we're actually reading your feedback. Check
yes. Also, Theocat linked this survey,
And I want to say, we're really enjoying your show.
Yes.
Yes, well.
Especially
we get together, the three of us get together every first and third Tuesday. Was it Wednesday of each month to listen to your show? So thank you for
entertaining
you for putting
us
it on for
so
us.
Much.
It's great. We don't have to do anything,
and we don't, as you could probably tell by listening to it.
That's right.
So
off the cuff is our mantra.
I'm reading this story in theatlantic.com, but you can also find it at the Pew Research. I think PRRI is Pew, right? I don't know. But it is about another study, which is not overseas for those of you who are here on our side of the sea.
Yeah.
New survey data indicates that religiously unaffiliated people in the United States are diverse, and in many places they make up a greater share of the population than any single faith group.
Hey, hey.
In at least 20 states, religiously unaffiliated people make up a greater share of the population than any one faith group or denomination.
Wow, really?
These findings are drawn from a new survey from the Public Religion Research Institute, or PRRI, which sampled more than 100,000 United States adults between January 2016 and January 2017. The report's state-by-state breakdowns offer a detailed look at the geography of American religion and non-religion. People who don't identify with any particular religion also don't fit any particular demographic mold. They come from a range of racial, income, and educational backgrounds. While Christianity still dominates the country's religious landscape, and that's why you have to be careful about this because,
right.
You know.
The article is not saying that more than half of people in those 20 states are atheists. It's saying once you break it down to people in all the different religion-related camps, that in 20 states, the biggest one of those is atheists, which is still pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Good for us. Yay, go atheists.
The share of unaffiliated adults in the United States had grown from 16 to 23% over seven-year period.
Okay, 23.
That's unaffiliated.
Huh. Right, I know. I know that doesn't necessarily mean atheist per se. Right. No, it doesn't mean self-proclaimed atheists per se.
Sure. While roughly 70% of American adults identify as Christians, the so-called nuns – and I hate that everybody uses that word because I have to spell it every time. It's not people in habits, you know.
No.
Yeah.
People with no religion have been growing as a share of the population. Roughly 41% of Vermonters and 33% of those from New Hampshire aren't affiliated with a particular religion. This was also true in the Pacific Northwest, where more than a third of residents in Oregon and Washington didn't claim a specific faith.
Yeah. Weird. The upper left and the upper right corners of the United States.
I mean,
why those regions, do you think? Huh.
They're very far away from the South.
Maybe.
And here we are right in the middle of it, so explain us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good. That just answered a bunch of various questions.
I want to ask.
Raised. What a timely article.
I want to ask you guys who you think would, which state you think would be the fewest number of unaffiliated people, but I also don't have the answer.
The fewest unaffiliated.
The most religious states.
Right.
Right.
Where the highest percentage of people proclaim membership in some religion.
Yeah.
That's hard to say because...
I got the actual study up. Let's see how fast
I have to go to the Bible Belt.
Scott, it's like...
Yeah, before you say, I just want to talk this through. My first impulse would be to pick a very Christian state, but just because it's very Christian doesn't mean that it has the most people who have some religion in general, because that percentage is going to have to include your Muslims and your Jewish people and your
Muslims are like less than a percent.
Satanists and and everybody, huh? What? Well,
Muslims.
but it adds up. It adds up.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I would have to. I would actually suspect something in the. In the Southwest, like maybe a Nevada, I'm just gonna go. That's a big one because there's such a pressure to just be specifically Mormon there.
Yeah,
nah, I'm sorry. It's
is it not?
It's way more predictable than you're going
Mississippi.
Yes, it's Mississippi.
Oh well,
I knew it.
Let's see. Well, Mississippi was the least religiously diverse state.
Oh.
A majority of Protestants in Mississippi, 60% are Protestants. And then in Utah, 51% are Mormons.
Whoa.
And it also mentions that—
No, wait a minute. It says, okay, but doesn't— where's the rest of the— where's the rest of the percentage? Like in Nevada, it's 60%.
Other things. I'm sorry,
in Mississippi, it's 60% Protestant. Wow, is that how they're breaking it down?
I haven't
just
still
Protestant,
got—
Protestant? They're not going to subdivide it into the different
I
Protestant
haven't
cults?
Still got the full state-by-state data, but I can tell you that in the South, they've broken it up into five regions, and in the South, there's— The southern states overall, 43% are Baptist, 14%, 15% are non-denominational. So non-denominational still means Christians, right?
Not I believe, none. I believe so, yes.
And then Methodist, Pentecostal, Lutheran, Church of Christ, Presbyterian, Episcopalian— God. And then way down there at 1.4% in the South is Jehovah's Witnesses.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Glad they got their story straight.
Well, that makes sense, though, because, you know, that would only be people who've actually seen Jehovah, and that can't be very many.
Wait, I'm sorry. I was reading the wrong table. That's a breakdown of just the people who are Protestant. Sorry.
Yeah, okay.
No.
But that answers my concern about breaking Protestants further into their individual subcults.
Right. And it also mentions that Catholicism, which used to be the more northern flavor of Christianity, has been moving south, although I don't know exactly what they—
searching what they for fertile ground.
Wow, kids, get out of there.
Oh, boy. All right.
Anyway, thank you, folks, the people who submitted that.
Fascinating statistical stuff. So we talked a bit in the last couple of episodes about theism as it relates to tabletop fantasy role-playing games.
Yeah.
And we've gotten some feedback on that.
Feedback on that? That's so fringe.
But that's our audience, man, apparently. Yeah. Well, that's the audience we've kind of gathered for ourselves because we keep talking about
it. And it's an audience we appreciate.
This shit. I got two. You know, let me start with the one that's more specific. One is kind of diverges into computer games, which we should totally go there. But,
right. Yeah, absolutely.
We'll get there with letter two. Joseph writes, I really enjoyed your guys' discussion on D&D and a rational fictional character in a fantasy world. I've thought about this a lot ever since I watched some Christian movies as a gag.
Oh, poor bastard.
Did it work? Did you gag?
I would say odds are high. The thing is, like in the Apocalypse series, okay, see, he's bringing knowledge he has gleaned from watching these Christian movies. Like in the Apocalypse series, there are still atheists in these movies.
Right.
Kevin Sorbo.
After rivers turn bloody, after the rapture, and after people do magic. The reason is that these guys, Christians, have to tell themselves that the movie isn't really that fictional. Because these things are real, according to the Bible.
Right.
And there are atheists in reality, and Christianity doesn't allow the movie maker any liberty with conceding that maybe some of the stuff isn't believable or convincing, and that atheists just won't believe no matter what.
Right.
Yes, that's totally a thing. If I might, since Joseph brought up movies, one of my angriest movie moments ever. And it's not – alongside the standing ovation that the execrable Bruce Willis movie
Armageddon.
Armageddon, yeah, the meteor movie. Oh, yeah. So bad. Uh-huh. Got a standing ovation at the end. One of my other angriest moments in a movie theater was the end of the X-Files movie. Right?
Mm-hmm. Never liked the X-Files.
Where the woman who is the skeptic, right, conveniently gets hit on the head and loses consciousness moments before the giant UFO flies right overhead in plain sight of her partner. Right? So it's exactly the same kind of shit, right? If you want to portray atheists in a setting where the stuff that they're – or non-believers in a setting where the stuff they don't believe is not real, you got to bend over backwards to excuse them not believing.
Right.
In the real world, this doesn't take anything like that. In the real world, you just look around.
Nope, no gods.
See any UFOs up there? No.
Right?
Take a hard look at the facts. Any UFOs?
Nope.
Take a hard look at these facts. Any Jesuses, gods, anything? No evidence?
Nope.
No supporting evidence? No.
You familiar with the page on TVTropes.org, Hollywood Atheist?
Wow.
Oh, no.
Oh, of course there's that. Okay.
Yeah, there is such a thing. Yes, yeah. I'll skim it. Common to all portrayals of the Hollywood atheist is the idea that faith is the natural state and something must occur to drive the character away from the norm.
Uh-huh.
Given that the majority of humans worldwide are religious, this understandably colors media greatly, but still it's always – my reason for not believing is X. One never hears, I just don't have a reason to believe, which is the most common real-life reason given by atheists.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Who would
expect this level of rationality from TV Tropes? That's pretty good.
But I love TV Tropes.
That's great. They're awesome. That's great.
Compare with, and there's links to other tropes, Holier Than Thou, see Crisis of Faith. Also see Useful Notes on Atheism, which is one of their serious pages that's not about media. Not to be confused with the American conservative movement's more vocal members' view of Hollywood's war on faith.
And this leads us to just a little – in the middle of Joseph's letter, I'm going to do a quick little movie review. I posted a link to this film on the nonprofits group, fan group on Facebook. But Stephen Fry has written a novel called The Hippopotamus, and there has been a film version.
Hmm.
And I recommend it. It is not a perfect movie. In particular, you will probably be frustrated at the beginning when a character is hired to do a job the nature of which is completely not specified. And you're wondering, what is it that they have agreed to do? It slowly becomes clear during the course of the movie, but there really wasn't any need to be cagey about it at the beginning. It's you know, puzzling for no good reason. But if you want to see a movie where skepticism is given its proper due, you might want to watch that. Okay. The Hippopotamus.
The Hippopotamus.
It does not have high ratings on sites that rate movies. Never mind that. If you're listening to our show, you're almost certainly an atheist and will appreciate at least this rare instance of, wow, a movie written by somebody who understands where we're coming from.
Hmm.
Okay. Back to Joseph's letter. Speaking of the necessity of bending over backwards to enable atheists to exist in the context of films where there clearly are supernatural things going on, he says, it's a very interesting dynamic in my opinion. No one ever wants to play a materialist / naturalist character in D&D. It'd be like being the idiot straw man in a Christian movie.
There you go.
Yeah.
If Left Behind happened, we would quickly become Christians. Now, hold on a second.
No.
It depends what you mean by that. If what Christian means is acknowledging the existence of the thing and nothing more, then I guess technically, yeah.
Yeah.
But what it actually means to everybody who hears that word is follower of. And just because we had the proof of that thing shown to us does not mean we would be on its side.
Yeah. I mean, for instance, evolution exists, but I am not a follower of evolution.
Right. But Christians don't understand. And that's
one
of the things we always have to explain to them. If we lived on one of the D&D planes, we'd believe in their deities. Now, I like to bring up the Tekemel setting from TSR's Empire of the Petal Throne and my own Baythorm, the Plane of Tekemel RPG. Mm-hmm. It's a science fiction based fantasy RPG, meaning the fantasy has a science fiction premise. And in that, the creator of the setting talks about, yeah, there's basically not atheists here because there is evidence that these gods exist, right?
Right.
But even that, he's kind of cagey because he'll say that and he'll talk about how, like, at religious festivals, you see, like, giant, you know, ghostly manifestations of the gods towering over the temples and stuff, right, and, like, waving to the crowd. But then if you read the spell list, the priests have spells for creating giant projections of things. And they have rituals that they go through that are like by rote. They perform these rituals at these ceremonies.
Right.
So is that really the god, or is it a magical projection that is taken as the god by the believers?
It could be the huge billboards from Blade Runner.
Right. They're like parade floats, but made of magic.
Right.
But do even the priests in that world who are doing this stuff ritually, mm-hmm, after thousands of years of tradition, do even they realize that they are manifesting these things with their magical powers rather than them actually being the real things? So even there's still some room for being skeptical. Though he has a group in the setting that are more or less atheists, but they're anti-theists. They reject the authority of the gods.
Right.
That be back to Joseph. That being said, it's a good thought experiment. How would you, as a GM, deal with an atheist?
Atheist character. Yeah.
Yeah. If you had a player who wanted to be want their character to be an atheist in your fantasy RPG, where the gods are really a thing,
I would fuck with him so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, it would be fascinating to listen to the excuses that the character has to come up with to maintain his atheism.
But the other thing is, guys, that it depends on the specific setting, because in Dungeons & Dragons in general,
right,
it's a world where every nation has its own religion and its own set of gods, mm-hmm, and they're polytheistic religions for the most part.
Right.
And those are not the religions that go around grabbing atheists and persecuting them, right? The gods in a pantheistic religion, and particularly in a world where next door they have a completely different pantheon, they're way less picky about whether you believe or not. It's not like Christianity, where they're going to come for you in the night. Right, in medieval Christianity, the kind that you might find in D&D, where they're going to come before you in the night and drag you off if you express non-belief.
Any doubt.
Okay, sure. But I mean, are we not always just perpetually annoyed at Christians responding to "there's no evidence for God" by saying, "Well, he's not obligated to demonstrate, you know, to do magic tricks for you. He doesn't need to." And, like, that's a terrible excuse. And I like to think that if I'm like a minor god in a universe with gods, I would be like, "Yeah, sure, here's a lightning bolt next to you. I'm not a monster." But I think it is the polite thing to do to give occasional demonstrations of your power and wisdom as a god.
Sure. But also, I think I talked about what I did with the question of religion in the D&D campaign I ran, where that's a world where there's actually stats for the gods. And if you have a powerful enough player character, you can go beat them up.
Right.
And it's a world where, you know, in this nation, they follow the Norse gods that have their creation myth. And over here, they follow the Egyptian gods that have their creation myth. And they can't all be right about where the world came from.
Right.
And the backstories of the gods of those different religions can't all be true. And so I brought in the atheistic-ish religion, which says, yeah, they all exist, but none of them are gods in the sense of, you know, progenitors that are the founders and owners of the universe. And therefore, there was the atheistic religion was not so much atheistic as anti-theistic in that their teaching was, doesn't matter how powerful you are, you really need to treat everything with a modicum of respect.
Right.
And
they need some kind of theistic Geneva Convention.
And then, of course, the great big powerful central empire embraced this religion of Gormanism, the followers of the wizard Gorman who went around and beat up the gods. And with that justification, they went and conquered a bunch of their neighboring countries that worshiped these pantheons in order to free them from the tyranny of those gods. And the campaign took place sometime after that. And I actually had gods from the local religions who had converted to Gormanism. And were just mighty, powerful characters who had agreed, yeah, we got to stop being dicks.
Right.
So that's how I would deal. How I would deal with an atheist is I'd put him in my setting where, yeah, there's these powerful entities, but you're right, they're not gods in that sense. Any other?
I don't know. I think I've mentioned a fantasy series I enjoyed once called the Rose of the Prophet, where the world is just there's. The world is a 20-sided die, and each triangle is ruled by one of the gods that sort of personifies a group of mythology. So there's like a Christian-ish god, and there's like a nomad god who commands jinns and ifrits. And they're warring with each other, and like human belief is kind of powering how strong the gods are in their war.
That's a classic trope.
Yeah, it's a trilogy. It's pretty fun.
Yeah. What was the name of that again? I'll write it down.
The Rose of the Prophet.
Okay. To finish up Joseph's letter, I think any one of us could easily imagine better proof than the Christian God supposedly provides. God is a shitty GM.
Yes.
I talked about this in another context, I think, on the Atheist Experience. There was a guy, a Christian guy, who wrote an apologetic thing saying something about, you know, the God makes these rules, and the rules are how you live, and I approach that from the game design perspective, right? Mm-hmm. That a good set of rules, if you follow them, they tell you how you ought to behave to win, right? And in fact, Christianity is a really bad set of rules for having a good life,
right?
It's a good set of commands if you don't give a part about how people actually get along, right? But it's not rules in that sense.
Well, the whole life we live is just a test,
right?
It's after you're dead that you're in your victory condition, you know.
Yeah. Thanks for your time. I love the show and hope to be able to support you guys and your personal projects soon. Oh, you mean our personal projects like Dennis Lubay's Patreon?
Patreon!
Which is called, what should they search for on Patreon?
/ Dennis Lubay.
Patreon.
www.patreon.com/Dennis Lubay.
And mine is Patreon/Art of Jeff D.
Well, since I work for one of those soulless corporations, maybe I'll just go ahead and say that if you go to firesidegatherings.com and look for events in your area, first of all, I wrote that webpage, or Woo. Many parts of that webpage. Uh-huh. It's lovely. This month, if you attend an event, I believe you get a chance to team up with all the other people who are at the party and fight the Lich King on your phone.
Neat.
So check that out.
All right.
I'm not speaking for my company in any way or stating what it is.
Right.
Disclaimer, disclaimer, disclaimer.
Thank you, Joseph. What else you got for news, Russell?
So this is a, you know, this is a kind of story that I am interested and also hesitant to read because it's basically Christians squabbling with other Christians, uh-huh. and some of them look better than others.
Yeah. Yeah, but we can maybe get some shots
once in a while.
Give it a shot.
So first of all, thanks, John Azel, who is at Ambolu, AHMBOLU, on Twitter. So Robert W. Lee IV, he is a great nephew of the probably better known Robert E. Lee.
Okay.
And Robert E. Lee is a Confederate general, and that kind of thing
you mean was.
Well, not anymore, yeah.
Okay. Just being a stickler. Go ahead.
That kind of thing has been in the news a lot lately because white supremacists have really sort of taken up the Confederacy stuff as their symbols. Anyway, Robert W. Lee went on the MTV Video Music Awards. He is a minister himself and a newspaper columnist. And on the Music Awards, after the slaying of Heather Heyer by a group of white supremacists, he said, I'm a descendant of Robert E. Lee. We have made my ancestor an idol of white supremacy, racism, and hate. As a pastor, it is my moral duty to speak out against racism, America's original sin. Today, I call on all of us with privilege and power to answer God's call to confront racism and white supremacy head on. Now, this guy is a Baptist, I think. I'm not sure. But guess what the church guess how the church reacted to this? Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Bunch of parishioners gave him blowback, denounced him, and he stepped down as pastor of his North Carolina church. Not Baptist. He was pastor at Bethany United Church of Christ in Winston-Salem. Mm. Has long supported removing monuments to the Confederacy and has already has already drawn attention for his lineage and for his stand against white supremacy prior to his MTV appearance.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to build this guy up, but I thought this would be a good doorway to ask what you guys think about symbols and taking statues down and other stuff like that.
Well, it's I think the statues should come down because they're not informing you of the existence of the character. No, they are literally putting the character up on a pedestal to be admired.
Yeah, I certainly agree with that viewpoint, though on the question of whether they should come down, communities decide whether to put things like that up. Mm-hmm. And communities have the power, they have the decision-making power about whether and when to take them down.
Sure.
And they are exercising that authority.
Yes.
So people from outside that community screaming and yelling or descending on them with Nazi flags and automatic rifles and shit.
To defend the statues.
Are full of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There's also been like a renewed wave of hand-wringing about how this is political correctness come to kill us all.
Every time that a community decides to either put a statue up or take a statue down, they are expressing their views on whether that's right or not. That is not political correctness. That's what that community wants to do. It's always going to be an expression of what they want to do, and you know, slandering it by putting the ugly name political correctness on it is entirely beside the point. That's just trying to make it sound bad by calling it a bad name.
Right.
Yeah. Our president said something about how sad he is to see the history and culture of our great country being ripped apart with the removal of our beautiful statues and monuments.
Oh, God.
And I think – so, I mean, what occurred to me today is that the argument that you need to keep these statues around or else we'll lose our historical understanding is almost exactly the same argument used to prop up these fucking Ten Commandments monuments you see there everywhere.
Yeah, they're
right?
They're just historical.
It doesn't matter.
That nobody could possibly learn anything except by looking at a statue.
Right. It doesn't matter that the whole country is paved by fucking Bibles.
Right.
No,
right.
That one freaking monument has to stay there and tell us what the Ten Commandments were or we'd forget.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, these things go up with various motivations, but they're always after the fact defended by saying, look, don't think about what these things stand for, even though that's clearly why we put them up in the first place.
They're right. Ceremonial.
Uh-huh.
It's just ceremonial racism, that's all.
Yeah, we don't want to forget about World War II, so we'll name streets after Adolf Hitler. Yeah, that sounds like a great idea.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And lest people think that my comments support communities that want to put up monuments of this kind.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on one level, they do, because again, that is that community exercising its authority to make those decisions. There is then a further question about whether the claims they make to justify their decision are accurate or inaccurate. And that is a further place we can go. But I don't think that is I don't think that is the place to start with these discussions. And too many people who want to scream and yell about this skip that step as if it's their business, as if it's their personal business what happens in that town. You know when it's your personal business what happens in that town? When you're a citizen of that town. That's how it works. So.
Yep. All right. I'm done with that.
Okay. Well, I have my other letter about religion and gaming. Mick of Melbourne says, just listened to your discussion of role-playing a religious character and was reminded of Black and White. Remember Black and White?
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah. Have there been recent versions of that franchise?
No, really. I think there was a two.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the high concept of that game and the first few levels, and then it just descended into this really punishing and kind of boring wood conjuring simulator.
Uh-huh.
I remember that I had played Populous.
Yes.
Oh yeah,
Populous.
Game. Same company or.
Was it
Peter Molyneux?
Yeah,
I think.
Peter Molyneux.
Well,
yeah.
Not to be confused with Stephen Molyneux, the libertarian cultist, but Peter Molyneux made some great games.
I personally enjoyed Populous more. Uh-huh. I thought it was more abstract, but it was also a clearer game.
Which one? The first one?
Oh my God! Were there more than one?
It must have been the first two. Yeah.
It must have been the first one mostly. I think I played two.
Populous general... 3 has you kind of running around with an avatar and building houses for people.
Okay. The thing is, have I talked about this before? It's hard to translate this experience. You know what? I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me read some more of Mick's letter.
Yeah, yeah.
Black and White is a video game from 2000 in which you play as a tribal god and compete against other gods to establish your cult's dominance. Yep. Obviously, a god dies when nobody believes in it anymore. What I find interesting about it is that you can cultivate belief either by benevolence or by terror. The mana for these acts is generated by either worship or sacrifice. My playthroughs usually start with my attempting to be a friendly god, impressing them with healing and food miracles, helping them plan thriving villages and so forth. However, that plan is laborious, and when there's a competing god breathing down your neck and you're starting to lose, that sacrificial altar starts looking mighty tempting.
Yeah.
Next thing I know, I'm sacrificing innocent children by the dozen in order to keep up the barrage of fireballs and lightning bolts with which I'm grinding the neighboring heathens into the dust. I guess what I'm saying is that I really started to identify with Yahweh. It's easy to judge him for his bloodlust, but I'd have been no better in his sandals. Well, Mick, hold on there a second. That is a game experience designed by game designers
right.
to work a certain way. There is no reason at all to assume that Yahweh would have been operating under those specific constraints,
yeah.
particularly the constraint about there's other gods. But despite a few throwaway lines in the Bible, the premise of Judaism and Christianity is that there is no only one God, and it's him. So he's got no excuse to be resorting to those kinds of tactics because he's being pressured by other guys.
Right.
Games are definitely experience delivery systems, and the way yeah. the kind of experience that you have tends to be colored by what sort of rules the designers set up.
Right. Yeah. Well, if they're well designed.
Yeah, but watching the Ten Commandments
yeah.
and seeing how the people you've just sure. rescued are so fickle that they no. turn to the golden calf almost instantly, right? It's like, yeah, I'll be one that smites, goddammit.
Right, but an omnipotent, omniscient God
uh-huh.
would not have made...
Wouldn't have made those mistakes in the first place. He'd know place. Human nature. Right. He'd know exactly what they do. What right. they'd do.
Right.
Yeah.
I really, really, really want to design a God's role-playing game.
Uh-huh.
It stopped me if I've talked about this before. I can't remember. I'll tell almost anybody who'll listen. But my premise for a God's role-playing game
uh-huh.
is that inevitable scene you get in Greek mythology movies where the camera goes to Olympus and there's
right.
gods standing around some kind of table or something that has like it's like a chessboard and it's got pieces on it representing the big monsters and the cities and the heroes
and, the heroes
and stuff.
And, yeah.
and they're moving them around like generals in World War II pushing tanks with sticks, right?
Right.
But that's the role-playing game I want to do. I want the tabletop to be that surface. And the things you're moving around are your yeah. creations
yeah.
that you're motivating in the world. But you are the gods. You're not
right.
down in there, though you can manifest if you want, right?
Right?
Mostly the game is about being the gods up at the god level. It's really hard to do that and make it uh-huh. make it feel right. I've got a set of rules. It's as simple as I've been able to make it for creating things that have relevant characteristics in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So that those things can move around and interact in a way that makes some sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to do that and then keep it simple enough that you as a god can like create 8 or 9 different major things and keep track of them and remember what they do. It gets pretty complicated pretty fast. Plus... I've not yet got a grip on how you then challenge the player characters.
Hmm.
Right.
Right. Are they a team or should it be – should they be a pantheon? Or should they be competing or should yeah. there be factions working against each other? I kind of think that making it a group of adventurers is the wrong move.
Uh-huh.
But any step away from that – makes it a much harder game to run.
Right.
And then the game master winds up being one guy who's got to run many more created things coming from some NPC bad guy or pantheon,
mm-hmm.
you know, off the map. So still struggling with that. Someday I will crack it.
Right.
Totally a thing I want to do. So that was thank you, Mick, from Melbourne. I think it's time for special things, the special segments of some kind.
Hmm. Did you want to launch into it? Well, okay. So, yes, it is time for a special uh-huh. segment, one that we refer to as
Shit Internet Apologists Say. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was extremely mighty.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
So I brought in something, but then you also brought in something.
I have a letter from a listener that necessitated some research, and the research led to a thing, which is effectively going to turn into a shit internet apologist say.
Yeah, so we're going to spend a little bit of time on each, I think.
Well, let's do yours. This week. Let's do yours, and then if there's time for mine, we'll do mine.
Now, I picked this one because it's topical. There's a hurricane going on, as we mentioned a few times.
Yes.
Disaster Recovery.
You can donate to help by going, if you're watching us on YouTube, to the upper right, you say, Russell?
Yes, I believe so.
There is a button to donate to the ACA.
Yeah, it's right there. It looks like a lowercase I.
Donations received tonight or this week, or what's the
rule?
Through next...
I don't want to say a specific time frame, but definitely through tonight. And we've already basically got $2,600 to contribute from before tonight. So,
but we'll take in more if people want to run more through the ACA. Or if you're concerned that you might be outside the time limit on that, you can go direct to foundationbeyondbelief.org/hurricane-harvey-drive.
Although you are of course, welcome to support the atheist community of Austin tonight or any other time.
Right.
Where did my story go? Oh, yeah, here it is. It's on Fox News, and it's by Rick Steadman, who I can only assume is a professional blowhard. His name sounds pretty familiar to me.
Wasn't that Oprah Winfrey's husband or something?
No, I don't. I hope
not.
It was
a different Steadman.
I mean, I don't worship Oprah Winfrey like some people seem to, but I have more respect for her than that. He is the author of Praying the Armor of God, something, something, something.
Something, something, okay. Something?
Yeah. I don't know. Google just showed me a thumbnail.
Praying the Armor of God.
Okay.
So Rick Steadman asks this. What he seems to think is an incredibly fascinating question, although it's one that I find fairly uninteresting. The title of this is, Where is God in the Terrible Tragedy in Houston?
Oh, he's enjoying the show.
Well, he's got that nice big religious building facility that they wouldn't let any
He's hanging out in Joel Osteen's belfry.
That's what
he's hanging on to what's his.
That's where he is.
He's hovering over the landscape with his mouse cursor pointed at the people.
Deciding whether to set up that sacrificial altar.
Moving the little pieces around on the board. We'll have the rescue craft avoid this area.
So Rick Steadman says, that's a really good question, one which I've heard whenever a hurricane, tornado, or tsunami wreaks havoc.
Well, yeah, where is your God now? Wow.
Pity if something was to happen to him.
And it deserves an honest, though maybe surprising answer.
Oh, surprise us.
Please, say something original.
It's been said that tragedies bring out the best in people, and that certainly is the case in Houston. Although in this case, the best in people doesn't seem to involve, like, city planning or anything.
Right.
And in addition, and here's my answer to the question posed above, tragedies bring out the imago in people. That's in italics.
Imago.
Imago.
Is that not Trump's resort place?
Yes, Mar Imago.
Lar Imago.
Well, the first definition is the final and fully developed adult stage of an insect, typically winged. I don't think that's the one.
No.
The biblical claim that humans are created in the image of God. We've all seen the stirring TV images of people helping others in Houston. What some fail to see is the reflection of God's own character in these moving images.
Really? Because what I remember seeing is bands of armed fascists moving around threatening to shoot anybody that they caught looting.
Mm-hmm.
That part of an example of God?
I also saw the president of a large chemical company, which was conveniently located in the middle of a bunch of living spaces.
Yeah.
Stonewalling reporters when they were asking, can you provide us with a list of the dangerous and flammable and possibly explosive chemicals that you might have?
Right. He wouldn't.
Because, before they exploded.
Because all those representatives of God's grace in the Texas legislature made it so that the chemical company is not required to reveal what they have in storage.
Correct. Compassionate volunteers helped nursing home patients flee before the rising waters inundated their residences.
And also, these compassionate representatives of God's grace and the Texas legislature, they made it so that developers could build in lands that were in danger of flooding. And another one, a great big orange one in Washington, D.C., rescinded rules that made it harder for developers to build in places that were going to flood. These are all marvelous examples of God's grace.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's where he is. That's where he is during this disaster. He's all those places.
So, yeah, he cherry picks a bunch of inspiring scenes that he's got a hard on for.
And there's a bunch of inspiring things, too. And here we have religion once again seizing the credit for people that have nothing to do with them doing good things, right?
Right.
Something good happened? Oh, that was my invisible friend.
Yeah. The disaster is merely a stage upon which humanity can show its wonderful values. Yeah. Well, I can only hope that guy suffers a terrible disaster. So
yeah.
That people around him can show how wonderful they are.
Be inspired by his suffering.
Yeah.
Families wept over the deaths of loved ones just as Jesus wept near the tomb of his friend Lazarus. Could our tears and sorrows be reminders that death was not part of our original design, that we were created to be like God? Think about it. If atheistic materialism is true, don't you think...
Whoa, 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 whoa!
Yes.
No.
You do not go down... Fucking asshole.
He does not get to go down that rabbit hole. You can't, on the one hand, say we were designed to not die, and so all this death that he's taking advantage of to say, oh, look, all that sadness is so beautiful, right?
Hot.
That, and therefore God can't say, on the one hand, that wasn't supposed to happen in the first place. And then on the other hand, oh, but, you know, you can't blame the God for that sadness existing because that wasn't the original plan. It's one or the other. Either he planned for people to experience grief.
Yeah.
Then you can say the grief is beautiful and give God credit. If you say they weren't supposed to experience the grief, you cannot then claim credit for the grief when it occurs.
Right.
One or the other.
Pick one. Damn. God, what a manipulative little shit this guy is.
Mm-hmm. So where was God? God was mourning with those who mourned their loved ones' deaths. God was inspiring the acts of compassion, the risks through rushing water, and the intuitions to choose the right thing in a world that prefers relativism.
Except
this
he wasn't.
Guy needs to
except
shut the fuck up.
He wasn't there, right? Not caught on camera. Sorry, no. All that's there is you, asshole, claiming credit for it. It's like you know when some random person won the Nobel Prize. You know where my invisible friend was? He was standing right there next to him.
Right.
What? No, you do not get to claim credit for other people's shit, dude. Mm-hmm. Just because your invisible friend is invisible. No, sorry.
Yep.
Ugh. Did I happen to mention that I don't much care for religious people? I don't know if that's coming through or whether we've established that on the show or not, but
we
I just don't like them.
We moved down to the last paragraph. It's been 10 minutes, so that should leave plenty of time for another one.
Sure.
God is not absent, but is very, very subtle. He hides himself in plain sight.
So subtle, as
subtle
to
be. As to the point of invisibility.
Yes. But can be found when we learn how to decipher the clues that point toward his presence, and those clues are abundant right now in Houston.
Oh God!
Except you listed zero clues, dude. What you did is you made claims.
Right.
Claims are not clues. Claims are claims and require evidence to support them. What a prick.
Yep.
Okay, Michael writes, hey guys, my Catholic mother has become infatuated with the work of one, I think that's Friar, Robert Spitzer.
I think it's father.
Father? Okay, Robert Spitzer, S.J., whatever that means, who has released...
It quote, is father.
Okay, quote, proofs of for God's existence, unquote, claims to leverage science of the universe and physics to justify belief in a Catholic God, and now has a show on EWTN as well as a podcast and many books. I'm not smart enough to start debunking this guy's claims. Where can I start for something like this? Could you guys take a look through new proofs for the existence of God and offer some clarity? Thanks for your help and amazing work. Well, no, dude. We are not going to go buy some Christian asshole's book to read it for you to straighten you out. No, we don't do that.
No.
So as
you can buy the book, and I would recommend you buy the book if you want to know what the book says.
Yeah.
But
I have some brief recommendations because this is actually a pretty frequent request for you and us and lots of public atheists. It's could you please read this incredibly tedious book or watch this video for me and tell me what you think? The best way to get an answer is to watch it yourself, synthesize what they say, and write down a summary of the argument and what's bothering you about it. And then having done the initial legwork for us, we'd probably be happy to comment on your findings and give refutations.
Right.
I think that's the way to be a good, effective atheist.
And now these days, you can probably look on the web and see if somebody has already read the book and already torn it to shreds.
Yes. There
However.
There is, of course, the internet and Google. But no, we are, just to clarify, we are three unpaid volunteers.
That's right.
The ACA takes donations. We don't get paid. Okay, we do not have the funds to go buy every book that one of our listeners would like us to comment on, or the time to read every book.
Right.
That so the way it works is if we happen to have read that thing, then we can comment on it.
Yeah.
That's how it works. But I did do this much for you, Michael, because, you know, we love our listeners, even if we yell at you. Father Robert this was an interview on EWTN News, which is exactly the place that you said that he had a show. So with no surprise that the outlet that is carrying his show also did an interview with him because it's self-promotion.
Right.
Father Robert Spitzer releases book on new proofs of God's existence. Okay.
I think it's only fair that you get to do the echoey effect since you're basically reading another one. Try it out.
Shit. Internet apologists say.
Wow. Or two.
All right.
I should have said more shit. So the findings of science and philosophical reason help prove the existence of God, Father Robert J. Spitzer, S.J., has said in a new book. Now, I should mention, this article is from 2010. So when we say new, we don't mean all that new.
No.
Yeah.
It was
hardly new.
It had already come out in 2010, so more than 7 years ago.
Right.
And I think we'll find when we analyze some of this stuff
that
it goes back farther than that. In an exclusive interview, he argues that if the universe had a beginning, it had to be created. He adds that people should not be misled by those who think that science has disproved religion.
a former president of Gonzaga University.
Whoa.
That could be a thing as far as I know.
Yeah. The Jesuit priest is the author of New Proofs for the Existence of God, Contributions of Contemporary Physics and Philosophy from the William B. Erdman's Publishing Company. Addressing the claims of atheism, the work uses physics and philosophy to discuss the evidence for the existence of God.
Well,
our boys in blue are marching on.
He's on a roll.
Speaking with EWTN News in a Wednesday phone interview, he said proofs for God's existence are important because the connection between faith and reason has been part of Catholic tradition almost since its inception.
Yes. By the way, EWTN is Catholic television network.
Okay. Mm. And I want to chime in here. Almost since its inception?
Yeah.
So what you're saying is, not at its inception.
No.
At its inception, the connection between faith and reason was essentially non-existent, is what you're saying.
Yes.
And that all of this is playing catch-up after the fact.
Right.
I just want to point that out.
Faith and reason are consistent with one another because both are from the same source, God.
Whoa!
Now I need a voice for this guy. What is this?
God invented reason, huh?
I'm Yerby Spitzer. If God leaves...
Oh, hello, well-behaved Mormon woman.
Oh, I don't want to be the well...
No, I love that voice.
If God leaves clues that are accessible to human reason... I'll start again. If God leaves clues that are accessible to human reason, then it's important that we accumulate them and help people to see that reason and faith are consistent with one another. Well, yeah, that's a big if.
Yeah.
Right? I would agree that what you need to do is accumulate the evidence and see if reason and faith are consistent with one another.
Yeah.
This is particularly important today because many young people are being misled by those who say that science has disproved faith.
It has not. It's quite the opposite.
He continued, criticizing a pop culture agnosticism or atheism with a pseudo-intellectual bent whose adherents accuse people of faith of being ignorant or naive.
Wow.
Man, this is the most obnoxious puff piece I've read all year, and this has been a year of seeing people suck up to...
I'm trying to get to the point where he... I could not find on the internet a list of the specific new proofs which this guy claims.
Uh-huh.
So this is the closest I was able to get where he's asked questions.
Right.
About
well, you have to buy his book to see that.
And we're not gone.
Now,
I believe we've established
that. Pirate it, please. Mm.
But people of faith are very much consistent with reason and science. Father Spitzer contended, the proofs for God's existence on which he works require some acquaintance with science, whose conclusions can change according to new discoveries.
Oh,
they always have to get that dig in there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we change our minds. You know what? Because we learn more. You fucktards don't change your minds because you don't care what the evidence is. You're going to believe anyway.
Hang on. If faith and science are perfectly in harmony, as these guys are suggesting, then if one changes, the other has to.
That is a damn good point. That right there proves that his premise is bullshit.
Yep.
When talking about God.
Oh, sorry. one of the things that always strikes me about doing shit, apologists say, for so many weeks.
Yeah.
Is that the people who do this professionally aren't really that much better or more convincing than just your average rank and file random ass caller. And I mean, this guy doesn't really say all that much in this interview, but he's just got the guy fawning all over him as if he was saying something amazing and insightful and new.
Yeah.
It's not new. When talking about God, you're talking about a beginning, he noted. I'm back to the Mormon woman.
Yeah,
I've lost the voice.
Wi-Fi.
He was more nasally.
He cited the BVG theorem, which holds that every universe which has an expansion rate greater than zero would have to have a beginning.
Actually, that's not true, because you could have a series of bangs and contractions, which, you know, is conveniently not referenced here.
The point of this claim is that the universe is nothingness before its beginning, which, again, if you had a series of bangs and contractions, then you'd never have to have nothingness.
The first principle of metaphysics is that from nothing, only nothing comes. In other words, nothing can't do anything because it's nothing.
The first principle of metaphysics?
What the hell? I don't think there is a first principle of metaphysics.
Yeah.
But this, first of all, this is not new. We've been hearing this argument since forever.
Yeah.
Okay. Not new. Not a new proof. And
hey, guys, I just discovered some totally new scientific theory. What if the universe was. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Go on.
And we agree that nothing can't do anything because it's nothing. But then there's nothing new here. This is just the same old, okay, fine, where did your God come from thing, right? Mm. Which they're never going to address because it's a thing they take on faith. Well, I'm glad that to you, you can apply your unjustified religious belief as an answer to these questions that science is still investigating. Good for you, but that doesn't actually mean anything. You have not actually proved anything. So these are not – they're not new, and they're not proofs.
Yeah.
If this is true, then the universe could not have created itself, Father Spitzer said. He alluded to physicist Stephen Hawking's recent claim to that effect, calling it metaphysically absurd and reliant upon an equivocal use of the concept nothing.
Stephen Hawking knows what he's talking about when it comes to physics. This guy is a religious figure. He is not. I didn't see anywhere in here that it. Here is the guy's degree in quantum physics.
Oh, but he's an expert on metaphysics,
right?
which means
meta means bigger.
yes.
Don't do that, guys.
Thank you. No, I can handle the voices. Thank you.
Something else, which is not the universe, had to create it. That something else we just call a transcendent cause or God.
Oh, good grief! Totally not new. Wasn't new 7 years ago. Wasn't new 20 years ago.
And it's not what people describe. And it's not what people mean when they talk about God.
And it's not what people talk – they actually get to that later. And it's nothing to do with what physicists mean when they talk about the origins in the universe.
EWTN News asked whether these proofs tell us anything about the identity of God.
This is the point you just raised.
Right.
No, not really. That's where you start getting into the whole domain of faith. What you can deduce from physics at the most is that there is a likelihood of a creation, that the creative agency is very powerful to create the universe as a whole, and that this agency is super intelligent. Well, in fact, physics doesn't say any of those things,
dude.
That is you applying your beliefs to it and ignoring what physicists say about the non-necessity of intelligence to drive this process and the non-necessity of there being a any kind of conscious force behind it.
Right.
He said the superintelligence of this creator can be known because the values of the universal constants.
Universal constants.
Oh, boy.
This was not new 7 years ago. Physicists are dealing with the constants, and was it who's the physicist? He's passed away. He's well known for no. He wasn't one of the horsemen.
Neither was Sagan, science popularizer.
Right?
Yeah.
Don't know
that. I think, Michael, what you need to take away from this is a non-physicist just taking his faith and using it to give himself answers to questions about physics, which physicists are in fact still working on or have already resolved, and he just doesn't like the answer. So, all right, this is starting to get tedious.
Another thing I'd say just in general, since the question was how do you deal with stuff like this, is you do not have to be an expert on the subject as long as you understand how to evaluate what the experts in the field are saying. And mm-hmm. so noticing, like Jeff said, that this guy is not himself a physicist but seems to have a lot of opinions about physics – seems to be a red flag. And so what you should do is look up some of the terms he's using and find out if these are things that are generally said by people writing peer-reviewed papers, having PhDs in actual related fields and not just, mm-hmm. you know, random metaphysical whatevers.
I'll just skim the rest of this and get to some specific points. So the guy claims that we can infer that the creator is nice because he made a universe that is at least hospitable to life.
wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
How much of the universe is a place where people can live, where life can exist?
What percentage?
Not much.
Tiny fraction of 1%.
That's it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so it's
much more friendly to vacuum-based life forms.
Also, that's like saying this guy, I can infer that he's nice because he didn't beat me entirely to death.
Right.
Also, a few minutes ago, Stedman was saying that we can tell how great God is because he gives us all these opportunities to have shitty lives where we can help each other out.
Right.
Like, it's another kind of you get it both ways sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if the universe is a nice place, then thanks God. And if the universe destroys your home and leaves you homeless and kills people you love, thanks God for giving us a chance to show how good we are under pressure.
And they're saying science and faith merge together pretty well? Well, apparently not. No. I mean, because you get, the universe had to have a beginning. So who was it? God. Well, now, wait a minute.
Right.
These things are totally separate. Your science and your faith are totally separate.
Here's
They're
Spitzer,
not merging at all.
Here's Spitzer taking a swipe at us.
Oh.
Father Spitzer does not think that atheism is, quote, a matter of mere following of rational evidence, unquote. Okay. Certain assumptions are necessary for philosophical inquiry, he said. Citing the existence of the self and the world, the intelligibility of the universe, and the validity of the principle of non-contradiction.
Ugh.
Many philosophers who have these assumptions very much believe in proofs for God's existence, while many atheists do not address the arguments for God's existence. Excuse me. Atheists do nothing but address arguments for God's existence every time you morons open your mouths. So, I think what the unstated thing is here, he believes to be saying that if there are selves, if there is a world, if the world is intelligible, and if there is a principle of non-contradiction, that one or more of those things is itself evidence for the existence of a God, which ain't so.
Right. I don't see it.
It would be helpful in this interview if he spelled out his argument so we could rip him to pieces, but he doesn't. He particularly laments that atheists have not adequately addressed the argument offered by Jesuit priest Bernard Lonergan. Do you know Bernard Lonergan?
Nope. Never heard of him.
Do you know Bernard Lonergan?
No, never heard of him either.
You want to do a quick lookup?
I don't know. I don't care that much, but okay. Bernard
Lonergan. And it's Bernard.
Bernard Lonergan was a Canadian Jesuit priest. Died in 1984.
A.
Thanks.
And?
He's in the Internet Encyclopedia of Philosophy.
Does he have an argument for God?
Hard to read.
You should
these
keep
things.
Reading.
All right. You see if you can find it. Spitzer.
Like, Encyclopedia of Philosophy has very long articles for some reason.
Spitzer suggested that a key reason for atheism is unexplained suffering and disbelief that God will allow suffering and evil.
No.
Hey, dudes, you're the guys who believe in an entity that is all powerful, all knowing, and
all good.
All good, right? We didn't introduce that. You did. So you have to deal with the problem of suffering and evil. We don't. We're perfectly willing to acknowledge the existence of suffering and evil in the world because we believe in a naturalistic world where a bunch of shit is going on.
Right.
Some of which is going to be not good.
And the universe is uncaring.
The answer to that is duh. You people introduced the super powerful entity that's supposed to make everything okay, and you can't. Okay, you fucked it up. Not our problem. Your problem. While Christians view suffering as redemptive and a means to humility and love, that's once again, this is right. Exactly what that prick was doing with the hurricane, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
With the suffering from the hurricane. Sucking the blood out of other people's suffering so he can give credit to his invisible friend.
Right. And it's all, there's nothing bad happens. Everything is... misunderstood
opportunity.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people can view suffering as utterly tragic and therefore back away from God's existence. If people think that suffering is tragic and therefore back away from your God's existence, it's because you have failed to make your case that the God is all loving. And,
right.
And be alongside because his the, other characteristics.
Because the existence of tragedy.
That's what you are claiming. And if it doesn't fit, people aren't going to believe it. That's nobody's fault but yours, moron.
And why do you call it a tragedy if it's so wonderful?
Yeah, why do you call it suffering if it's so wonderful?
Yeah.
The question of freedom also plays a role, as some would view God as an imposition on their freedom and autonomy. Yeah, he holds a gun to your head, says, obey my rules or be tortured forever.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's well stated.
Further, there's a socio-political variety of atheism, which sees religion as the opiate of the people, which prevents social change, which it damn well does.
Yeah, we've seen that happen.
The overthrow of oppression, damn well does stand in the way of that. And the improvement of the world, damn well does do that, dude. If you don't want people to see your religion that way, don't be those things. But you can't, right? Because
the whole faith thing
the whole faith thing requires adherence to unproved and unprovable assumptions.
Yep.
And unproved and unprovable assumptions by necessity stand in the way of learning and improving things. Just does.
Yep.
Father Spitzer said that this is a revisionist interpretation of his history because religion, in fact, has caused tremendous social progress. No, it hasn't. Religion has ridden along the coattails of social progress, usually, you know, at the end of those coattails, being dragged along, kicking and screaming, when it becomes obvious that you can't continue unless you go along with what people have learned about how we ought to get along. Yeah. Now, some of that happens a little earlier, which makes it easier for you to make the claim. But if the root of it is not in the teachings of your holy book, then all you can claim is that some religious people who were incidentally religious, were involved in social movements,
mm-hmm.
which is the case. But you cannot tie that directly into your teachings in most cases. And for every example you can give of some cherry-picked phrase out of your Bible which seems to support a social movement, we can cherry-pick a phrase that was used to support the evils that
slavery
that social movement was trying to fix.
I have an essay that I love of a slave owner talking about how much the Bible proves that God wants him to have slaves.
Yep.
He said that more discussion about the proof for God's existence is a website, which I'm not going to read to you. Well, sure, I will. www.magmag.
Make America great.
Stop. I'm reading
inside.
Stop. I'm reading a URL. That's uncool.
Yes.
www.magireasonfaith.org. But if you go there, I will tell you, you will be disappointed because there is no further discussion there. What there are links to where you can buy his damn books.
Right.
Because I went there to try to answer Michael's question and couldn't. So there you go. This is standard garden variety apologetics. There was absolutely nothing new in any of that. Wasn't new 7 years ago. Wasn't new 20 years ago.
Now.
So, well, that's our show. Dennis,
well, Jeff.
That was your show.
No, that was your show. Sorry.
And you hope I enjoyed it.
Certainly was not my show.
You'll be back with another episode in 2 weeks on September the 20th. Until then, you'll leave me with I Am the Satellite by Brian Stieksma.
You should have said you are the satellite. Don't you know the guy upstairs left us years ago? So there ain't no fake except the one you make. And there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. So don't tell me life doesn't hurt. And that you don't need the people cause you've got your church. You gotta take your head out of the sky. Because there ain't nothing satellite.